is a lack of leadership. There is a lack of risk taking. That's for sure. Whenever we talk to brands, they are unwilling to change their ways. We realize that 6 months later, they come back to us and say, "Listen, we weren't mature, but now we think that it's time for us to pick up the pace and implement something."
Hello, everybody. Emma here, your host of the Interline podcast. This time on our show, we're talking to Hasna Khoda, the founder and CEO of Save Your Wardrobe, which is a platform and ecosystem designed to adapt to the needs of brands and retailers, streamlining the post-production experience through reservation and after-sale service management, covering repair, maintenance, and upcycling. In 2023, Save Your Wardrobe was awarded the Grand Prix of the LVMH Innovation Award, alongside five other winners, as well as becoming the winner of a special prize awarded for data and artificial intelligence. And earlier this year, Hasna joined our editor, Ben, on stage at Premier Vision Paris to talk about the true scope of modern extended product lifecycle. I wanted to speak with Hasna because I was fascinated by her story, which forms the foundation of Save Your Wardrobe as a company. Hasna was born and raised in Tunisia, has a background in economics and corporate strategy, with a deep commitment to circularity and zero waste. Her grandmother practiced upcycling by transforming old garments into kilims, traditional hand-woven rugs, used to cool homes during Tunisia's scorching summers. Inspired by this rags-to-rugs tradition and her observations of overconsumption in Europe, Hasna conceived the idea for Save Your Wardrobe, rooted in the belief that real circular fashion is about maximizing the use of items that people already have in their closets. I really enjoyed talking to Hasna about her journey and how Save Your Wardrobe is driving systemic change in the fashion industry, the practical solution that brings together global brands, local businesses, and consumers. Just before we get into my conversation with Hasna, I want to introduce the sponsor for today's episode, Sourcing at Magic, the milestone fashion event by Magnet Group, formerly Informa Markets Fashion. Sourcing at Magic is back for its second annual Sourcing at Magic New York event from the 22nd to the 24th of September. The perfect opportunity for fashion stakeholders to discover a globally diverse selection of manufacturers and suppliers who can provide low minimums, speed to market, and sustainable solutions. This season, verified sustainable exhibitors are being spotlighted across all Magnet Group events, including Magic and Coterie New York, to help forward eco-friendly and ethical consumption efforts across the entire supply chain. Sourcing at Magic is proud to be the leading trusted voice and research to their fashion community, and the event in New York this September will be a continuation of Magic's 90th anniversary this year. You can find out more about the New York event or the slate of 2025 shows by visiting www.sourcingatmagic.com. Now over to my chat with Hasna. Hasna, welcome to the show, and it's really exciting to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Emma. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Wonderful. So I want to start right at the beginning. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your career and the journey that took you to founding Save Your Wardrobe?
Yeah, sure. So I am Tunisian. I grew up in Tunisia, and my background is mostly in applied economics. So after graduating high school, I went to Paris and studied there. I did a business school and then a master's in applied economics, focusing on how to manage finite resources. When I grew up, I was surrounded by a family that was caring for the circularity, and they won tons of prizes for their efforts. And so I was really early on attracted by those values. And then I've started working with the French embassy, actually, in Tunisia. And that's when I realized, because Tunisia is a big country for manufacturing, or used to be. And I've realized that there is a big weight in the supply chain and manufacturing. And after that, I worked in the UK for a company called the Ethical Fashion Forum. And that's when also I've realized that all the focus of sustainability was towards the supply chain and manufacturing and sustainable materials. But everything that happens post-purchase wasn't really interested. There wasn't much interest in that side of the spectrum. So I've decided to dig a little bit into it, and that's how I came up with Save Your Wardrobe.
That's really wonderful. I think we don't always hear about such personal stories, although obviously everybody has one, but I love that it was a family connection and that's how you got into such an important cause. And you're right. I think there's a lot of focus on the supply chain and we really should be focusing on the whole chain. So it's really important work. Fantastic. And I guess that is what LVMH recognized as well. Save Your Wardrobe. Yeah, you were the winner of the Grand Prix. I hope I'm saying that right. which was presented at... thank you. so that was presented at VivaTech in 2023 last year. Yeah, so more than 1,300 startups applied from 75 different countries and you won. So what does winning this prize mean to you, and how has it changed the way that you worked before?
I mean, it's not any prize. It's LVMH is a leader in luxury. It's one of the biggest group. It's actually the biggest group. And so, having our work recognized in a way that is celebrated by the biggest brands is incredible. And also it's our solution wasn't, it was the first time actually that they were rewarding a solution that wasn't selling something to the customer, but actually supporting them in extending the life of their garment and things that they have already. So that beautiful narration of legacy, of cherishing the treasures that you have, I was really proud to carry that the prize and also to share it with the team, who's done an incredible work to step up the work at Save Your Wardrobe to an enterprise level. And I'm really, really proud to also work with the brands of the group and help them set up industrialized processes for the after sales strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, am I right in saying you were able to open a new office? Because I think you have operations in Tunisia and in Paris now and in London.
The prize was definitely a catalyst for growth for us. Our office in Tunisia was already there, but we managed to grow and also reiterate on the tech side of things, and thanks to La Maison des Startups, we're also able to have an office in the heart of Paris, in one of the biggest co-working space or incubator for startups, Station F. So that's also helped us incredibly to grow and meet with like-minded people.
Fantastic. And how long can you be there for? Is there a limit on the time that you're there, or can you be there for as long as you like?
So officially, we were meant to be there for 12 months, but they kindly extended our stay. So it looks like they like us. So they offered us to stay longer and keep our desks there.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad.
Yeah, really lucky. We had an incredible VIP. They took really good care of us, and
as they should. But I know nothing is given, you know, for no reason. It's very well earned. I want to talk a bit about your partnership with Maje. Are they Maje? Maje? They're a French brand, if I'm correct.
They are. Yeah. So Maje. It was also thanks to the prize where that recognition helped us accelerate as well our pipeline, and the brands who were or groups we were discussing before that felt like it was time to also adopt a sturdy after sales strategy. So we have helped the group, actually the SMCP group, so Sandro, Maje, Claudie Pierlot, and Fursac, set up and design processes for the after sales. Xavier Woodrobe has built this whole, not just the operational side, but also structure to connect the whole all the stakeholders of the post-purchase experience.
Right. No, that's really important. And I guess brands like that are so important to recognize the work that you do, because I wonder if it's still growing. And that leads me to my next question. How, in your experience, are brands thinking about the true extended product lifecycle at the moment? Is there a sentiment that making clothing last longer is a threat to new business? Or are businesses receptive to the idea that aftercare and services need to become necessary parts of their business models? Is there resistance, or is there more excitement, I guess?
I mean, no, actually, there is excitement. There is definitely curiosity, and there is a will to put in place repair and care at scale. But we also have to understand the context where the industry is not doing it's not doing as well as it used to, and now the strategies are different, and we see a polarization in brands, segments of brands, whether especially those in the middle, they have to choose between upscaling and go towards luxury, which means rethinking their whole supply chain and rethinking as well their customer experience. Or on the other side, they go for automation and ultra fast fashion to speed up the go-to-market presence. And so because of that polarization, both of the ends need to differentiate themselves from the competition, and need as well to implement strategies to respond to higher growth, which means higher risks of defects, which means also that there might be in the market items that after 1 or 2 years will have issues, manufacturing issues. So they need to take that responsibility as well if they want to accelerate and automate their supply chain. And on the other side, if they upscale and they promise longevity and durability, they also have to put in place repair, care, and other strategies to meet the expectations of their clients. So I think, I think brands are not necessarily looking at. It used to be the case a decade ago where planned obsolescence was part of the strategy to have you buy new, buy more. But now that era is gone, and brands are really realizing that they can't go still have the same strategy or old ways of doing business, and they are learning. So I wish they were faster, but it's not an industry that that adopts technology in the same way as others.
Yeah, I guess it's much more difficult to in some ways, and maybe this is a provocative question, but do you think that brands, or I guess the people within brands, genuinely want to adopt sustainability and more sustainable practices? Or is it more to do with, as we know, the legislation that's coming in and how consumers are demanding more? What do you think would happen if there weren't these pressures?
Yeah, from a personal level, what I've seen and all the people I'm talking to, they are genuinely interested in exploring better ways of doing business and better ways of selling their items. They are proud of the brands they work for, and they wish to improve the products. They wish to improve the customer experience. So there is a real genuine motivation, but this motivation has to also meet the cold numbers, and that's where they need startups like us, like Save Your Wardrobe, to support them in better understanding the different strategies that are in front of them, but also help them do the different calculations to make the business lucrative and profitable. It's not, again, genuinely, at least the people I've met, they want to make it work, and they need help to make numbers work as well. And so this is where our growth is also meeting the expectation of those brands, and also finding ways to develop AI solutions to understand the numbers, their forecasts and their projections, and make sure that any circular strategy they would implement will also be profitable and something easy to sell to their hierarchy.
Right. And you've mentioned two things that I want to talk about next, which is growth and also AI and these new technologies that have come in, especially in the last, I think it's like 3 years. What are some of the biggest challenges you've had to face when building out your platform? And have you seen things change for Save Your Wardrobe since you started in 2020, as you've grown your B2C and B2B coverage?
No, we've been implementing AI since 2018, actually. Whether it's for image recognition or for different features to improve on the back end, things that are not feature led but product led. So we've been using AI for a very long time, and there is incredible opportunities in improving the features that we have with let's take just the example of image recognition. There is incredible potential to use that to remove bottlenecks, something we've seen. And I'm a big believer that technology for the sake of technology isn't going anywhere. But if you have the right use case, if you have the right pain point to solve, AI can help remove a lot of frictions. It doesn't do all the job, but it definitely can support in improving the many things. We are strong of all these years of machine learning and improving the tech behind the scene. And now we are able also to ship to market to some brands products that are AI powered and that are state of the art, while keeping also the century long or age long skills and craft. So that's what I really love about this about Save Your Wardrobe, is that we are making technology help or support those crafts that would be lost otherwise.
Yes, for sure. And I guess that's one of the challenges today, is balancing the new with the legacy and the heritage. And like you said something earlier so beautiful about, you know, treasuring your clothes. And I think there is a real beauty in that, that I'm hoping just, you know, takes off more and more, obviously, through platforms like Save Your Wardrobe. And my next question, we've sort of touched on it before about the pressures of change and what's really going to fuel a transition towards a more circular economy. And I spoke about legislation, we've spoken about voluntary brand action and consumer behavioral change. Who do you think should be the leaders here? Should it be the brands? Should it be the consumers? As we have said, things are taking a long time, and I do think that is a bit to do with the legislation, but Where does the lead need to come from?
I mean, legislation can definitely push for adoption, but it's rarely something that brands will do happily. They will just abide by the minimum. Whereas if they realize it's a market push, so it comes from the consumers, and without that, they jeopardize their growth. I feel like it helps accelerate adoptions. There is a lack of leadership. There is a lack of risk taking. That's for sure. Whenever we talk to brands, they are unwilling to change their ways, we realize that 6 months later they come back to us and say, "Listen, we weren't mature, but now we think that it's time for us to pick up the pace and implement something." Some brands are just like checkbox. It's a checkbox exercise. They would say, "Okay, let's do the minimum. I want to communicate it, to communicate about it, and that's all. There isn't any ground to it or anything that can be built on top of it." So there is still that, and I put it in on the back of lack of taking risk and lack of leadership, visionary leadership. But this is changing, and I think that the industry is also waking up to a fast fashion hangover, and realizing that the 20 years that they spent pressurizing their supply chain manufacturers and really not investing in the quality of their items, it's catching up with their business, and we can see that some brands had to close down or to file for administration, whereas others who have seen the importance of sustainable scale and sustainable growth have been much more agile on with adopting circularity.
Right, exactly. And as I've said before, I think it's really not easy. So I feel for those brands that have had to shut down or go into administration. Perhaps it was not entirely their fault, you know. I know that it's a complex thing to do, scaling. So
it's an industry that often puts pressure on costs, on workers. There's a health aspect that has been ignored, and it's never easy to shut down a business. And I can definitely feel for the employees, for even the leaders who didn't necessarily want to shut up their businesses, but sometimes the reasons are cold, and they could have taken better decisions earlier on that would have saved their business. But like I mentioned, the lack of risk taking and vision has also played a disadvantage for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such an important point. We do forget sometimes about the human face of fashion. That's why I think Save Your Wardrobe does really bring us back to that. Of course, being in line with all of the important legislation and consumer mindset going forward. So you're in a great place to be. And a little bit about scaling. We've spoken about this a bit now, but as part of the big picture, how do you see the circularity ecosystem growing? Because onboarding service partners is going to be a big part of the picture. How are you approaching scaling your business? And I don't know if you have any advice for others who are not necessarily in the same space, but yeah, how do you see circularity growing?
I think it has to grow at the same pace as the business. So we are focusing on the B2B now. And something that is really interesting to discover was that many brands have their network of vendors and service providers, partners, but they didn't industrialize it or didn't have it structured. So it was on the responsibility of the store manager. It was very manual, and now they are realizing that something that they used to have needs structure, needs scale, needs a tech solution like ours. And so this is something that we've provided that for sure makes the scalability easier, because we don't have to scout for those vendors and providers. But at the same time, we have to also digitize an aspect that has never seen, so it's still very manual, pen and paper. So we have a big work to do in penetrating those vendors, very traditional tailors, with tech tools. And most of them, because they're all family businesses, they take on from parents to children, and the children are really keen to add technology and to modernize their parents' business, and so that eases a little bit the scalability part. And on the other hand, what we found a successful strategy was to have the brands support those local businesses and make sure that they are not left behind. So there is some sort of ESG responsibility when it comes to local businesses, how these brands can grow sustainably and help their community grow at the same at the same way.
Yes, and I think it's important not to rush, I guess. You know, it's it's one of the things, again, that's layered, because there is an urgency, of course. This, the matter of sustainability, it is urgent. But at the same time, you can't push something too fast. Like you said, it's a family business. There's a lineage, a heritage.
And that has to be translated with the tech side. So something that we've discovered early on is that to implement a successful repair and care or after sales strategy, you had to replicate the way those brands work with those tailors, seamstresses, in an IT level, and then add the or plug the add-ons, whether it's automation of communication or payment automation or logistics, and so that helps create a fully connected sort of nervous system. And without it, you stay manual and you kind of restrict the growth of circularity businesses.
Exactly. And there's never going to be a reason to do technology just for technology's sake, as you said. And do you have any recommendations for businesses listening who might want to start implementing new technology? Do you have any software or hardware categories that you see as being complementary to not only your ambitions, but I guess for others as well, that are essential for extending the lifespan of garments and feeding into circularity?
Something that I kept hearing ever since I started Save Your Wardrobe, and which I don't really like, is the notion of quick wins. And it can be something that people take, oh, let me do this, it's a quick win, but then you are not building the structure or the foundation of a sustainable business because of that. And so my advice would be to first think outside the box, check what is there out there, what are the businesses in resale, in rental, in repair and care, and take the problem on the other side. So don't think that what does these startups are doing, I'll do better. Whereas if you are from solving the pain point early on and meeting with the brands and meeting with your clients and knowing actually who your clients are, then you are able to build a value that will be easier to sell later on. Whereas if you feel like, there is a momentum in resale or there is a momentum in rental and momentum in repair and I want my share of that, then you can really easily replicate the same mistakes as the startups or the companies. And so my advice would be to think outside the box and build foundations and rely less on quick wins.
Yeah, that's really solid advice. And it's great that you can share these things because obviously it's still a competitive environment. But, you know, I do believe that in this journey towards a better future for all of us, collaboration is going to be essential. So your insights.
It takes a village.
Takes a village, exactly. It takes a country or more.
Yeah.
Hasna, my last question to you is, what's next for you and for Save Your Wardrobe? Do you have anything that you can share with us on the horizon?
We have very, very exciting product releases that are coming very soon. So we are a business that do things differently. We have an app while we are a B2B business. And the app is there to help us test and learn. And so something very exciting coming up really soon is an AI-based feature that will help people understand, educate them actually on what can be, how repairs work in general. And I'm really excited about that because this will be taken to a whole other level in the customer experience, in the enterprise level, removing a gigantic bottleneck and also adding knowledge and understanding on how things are built, made, and repaired. So I'm very, very excited about those features that are coming up, and obviously we will be continuing our work to with brands and retailers to make repair and care more accessible to customers.
Well, that's really exciting. Well, the Interline will be watching the journey closely and let us know the secrets. No, but it's been really.
Yeah, we can do a follow-up on this.
Yes, absolutely. But it's been really wonderful talking to you today, Hasna. Your insights are going to be super helpful for our audience. And we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Emma. Thank you, The Interline.
Thanks again to today's sponsor, our friends at Sourcing at Magic, for supporting this episode of the show. Just like its events in Vegas, Sourcing at Magic New York, taking place from the 22nd to the 24th of November, provides a space for important conversations on responsible fashion, sustainability, and community building, offering valuable guidance for fashion professionals across all stages of business. Don't miss the fusion of fashion and innovation at Sourcing at Magic. Explore where style intertwines with technology, offering a glimpse into the future of sourcing. More than just events, Magnet and Sourcing at Magic within the group is a deeply rooted community who are working towards fulfilling the vision of a more connected, sustainable, collaborative fashion industry. You can find out more year-round by visiting www.sourcingatmagic.com and look out for more collaborations between the Interline and the teams at Sourcing at Magic and Magnet soon. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Hasna. Be sure to give Save Your Wardrobe a follow on their social media platforms and look out for some exciting partnerships and developments in their pipeline. There are many more exciting guests in our podcast schedule, so make sure you don't miss an episode and subscribe to the Interline podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a follow on LinkedIn and Instagram. Also be sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter where we give you our analysis on the biggest stories of the week in the world of fashion technology. Finally, keep an eye out for the Interline's annual sustainability report that will be released at the end of September. The report will be an exploration of the current state of fashion in terms of environmental and ethical advancements, along with recommendations for actions needed from all stakeholders to expedite essential changes. It's really important reading for all stakeholders in today's fashion world. So look out for the report when it drops later this month. Thanks very much for listening. Bye for now.